Welcome back to this second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And welcome back to hour number two of Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette. Dr. Umat is off this weekend. Dr. Jerry Mixon is here answering your questions and taking your calls today. We're talking with Bonnie from Edmonds about that huge amount of Tylenol that her doctor had. 1,000 milligrams of Tylenol, three times a day. Is that a lot, Dr. Mixon?
It's a pretty good dose.
Okay.
I worry about pushing the dose of Tylenol, although it is a good analgesic, it decreases pain significantly. So, you know, she felt that impact when she took it. But I've also put people in the intensive care unit in liver failure because of the Tylenol if mixed with alcohol. And it doesn't have to be an alcoholic. It just has to be even moderate amounts of alcohol complicate the risks of Tylenol significantly.
Wow.
So if you're taking Tylenol, do not drink any alcohol. Make that very clear.
What if they drank alcohol and then they're using the Tylenol for the hangover the next morning? Is that different? I'm guessing.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, but you want the alcohol out of your system.
Okay.
You don't want the liver trying to cope with the alcohol
and the Tylenol
at the same time.
Okay.
Okay. So I always worry if you're pushing the dose of Tylenol because you got a lot of pain, I don't want you to have any alcohol in the mix at all. To minimize the risks, there are three different things you can use for pain, and you can rotate them. For instance, if you take your maximum dose of Tylenol, say 8 a.m., a few hours later, 2 or 3 hours later, you can take aspirin, which is metabolized completely differently. So Tylenol is primarily in the liver. Aspirin is primarily handled in the kidneys. And so a dose of Tylenol, 2 hours later, if you're still having pain, or as soon as you get any increase in discomfort at all, take your big dose of aspirin. And then if you get any increase in pain again, when it starts to wear off in the very early stage, take a big dose of a non-steroidal such as ibuprofen, okay, or ketoprofen, any of the profens, because all three of these drugs are metabolized by somewhat different enzyme systems and different organ systems. So Tylenol, then aspirin, then ibuprofen or ketoprofen, and then you go back to Tylenol for the next dose. That way, you're spreading out the frequency of each drug. So you get more frequent medication to keep your pain under control, but you don't hit yourself really hard with any one of the three. Does that make sense to you?
So shall I go back to 500 milligrams instead of 1,000?
It depends on your body size and how fast your metabolism is, but yeah,
I'm 115 and 5 feet. So
yeah, see, you're probably going to get good relief from 500 instead of 1,000.
Okay,
and it's a lot easier on your liver. And then if you start to wear off at all, don't wait for the pain to get bad. It's easier to control pain than it is to try to fix it after it recurs. So if you intervene early, as soon as you start getting twinges, even if it's only 2 hours, take the next drug. Okay. So take the aspirin, and then 2 hours later you can take the ibuprofen. And then 2 hours mm-hmm. after that, like, you go yeah. back to the Tylenol.
Mm.
Okay?
Okay.
So you don't overdose on anything, but you give yourself lots and lots of pain coverage.
All right. All right. So would you recommend a brace? I have a brace on there now.
Yeah. The braces are a mixed blessing. I mean, yes.
Yeah.
It takes the stress off the ligament. But if you wear the brace too long, it actually makes the muscles and the ligament weaker.
Yeah,
so
that's true
too. So you want to use it while you really need it, but then you want to do without it as soon as you can without being too miserable. And
okay.
You may want to use it only in the beginning, or use it all the time in the beginning, but then next only use it when you're actually stressing the joint, like you're out walking again.
Okay. So, I wonder if creams for pain, putting that on, it's a momentary relief, but it doesn't last very long.
No, it's not. And it's mostly, it helps the surface pain. It doesn't really penetrate deeply. So the oral medications are better for actually knocking down the inflammation and the bleeding in the tissues and so on. So
okay.
And the other trick is, you know, people tell you to use ice.
Yes.
Icing the injury decreases pain dramatically because it decreases the blood flow and it decreases the inflammatory reaction. That's mm-hmm. good news.
Mm.
But
yeah.
Interestingly, people who use icing end up having pain longer. So you get rid of the pain now, but you actually stretch out the time frame in which you will continue to have pain.
Oh.
Okay. So is it okay to use, to walk around on it, and even, during the day with the medication, I can get around a little bit, but yeah. I feel it. Is that irritating it more then?
Yes, it is. It is. You don't want to put things at too much rest for too long, because older people, anyone over 50 that doesn't use their muscles, will lose muscle strength very quickly.
Mm. Yeah, so I got to keep moving.
So you want to move as soon as you can without pain. But that's the key, without pain.
Yeah.
Remember, pain is nature's way of saying don't.
Yeah.
And you need to listen to Mother Nature, because, you know, you've all seen the margarine commercials, you know, where Mother Nature, you know, you fool Mother Nature and she laughs and says, well, it's not nice to fool Mother Nature. That's mm-hmm. not realistic. Mother Nature is an unforgiving, vicious, cold-hearted bitch, and she will get you if you cross her.
Right?
So you always want to listen to Mother Nature. When she says don't. Right.
Okay, so what I did yesterday is I got down on my knees and laid down and put my leg, I laid on my side, and I scooted across the edge of the grass and trimmed uh-huh. the whole backyard. Just
okay.
because I couldn't stand just sitting.
Yes, all right. Well, and I understand
and
that.
I felt good. Yeah.
If you're not having pain, that's good. Like I said, listen to Mother Nature. But when she tells you don't listen, okay, listen, don't ignore her, and but do as much as you can without pain. There's the trick.
Okay. All right. And thank you for the suggestions for the pain medication, because that's what I was worried about.
Yeah, all right. Mm-hmm. Take care, my dear.
Okay.
Yes. Heal fast, Bonnie.
Bye-bye.
All right, you're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. The phone calls keep coming, and yours can too. 206-421-5757. We're headed to Lakewood now with Jesse on the line. Hi, Jesse. Good morning.
Hello, Jesse.
Hello. Hello, doctor and assistants. The longer I listen to the radio and your program, and the older I get, the more I can relate to each and every caller. So,
funny how that works, isn't it?
Yes, so much information with each call, even if they're a variety of topics.
Right. And how can we help you today, sir?
Well, it's regarding this weight loss drugs.
Uh-huh. Semaglutide?
What's it called now?
Semaglutide is the chemical. They Wegovy,
Ozempic.
Ozempic. It's got a lot of different brand names. But yeah. It's GLP-1. GLP-1 agonists. So GLP. GLP.
Oh, okay. We don't need a GOP agonist.
No. Well, you know, good old people. That's us.
Yeah, there we go.
Okay. But anyways, my doctor retired, and I have an appointment with his replacement. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to bring up to her that, you know, in the last few years, I'm developing like a paunch, which I've never had.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and also losing a little muscle mass on top mm-hmm. of that. But I was just wondering if I would be a case where that drug might help. And also, I wanted to recommend it to a lady that I know who's about 50, as opposed mm-hmm. to about 70. And but this lady has developed obesity, you know. Her belly is...
Yeah.
But I hate to recommend things to people because nobody takes my advice anyways.
Well, I'll tell you what, I've been practicing medicine nearly 50 years, and I'm in the same boat about half the time. You know, the patient what they need to do, and they ignore the doctor. And then they get mad that it didn't work.
It didn't work. Doing nothing didn't work.
That's right, yeah. Ignoring the doctor didn't work. And then they're mad at the doctor.
I was wondering mostly about possible side effects, and I think some of them, the metabolic effects, might even be beneficial. Is that true?
They are. Yes, it is. These are drugs that are actually revolutionary in weight loss treatment in America. You know, the problem we've always had is that when people went on diets to lose weight, 97% of the people regained their weight by the time they had been off their diet for 1 year. And, you know, diets are artificial. You know, you're changing the way you eat, and you change it till you lose the weight, and a year later, you've regained the weight, except for 3% of the people keep it off. These drugs are revolutionizing what's happening because they change our metabolism, and they decrease our appetite. So you really don't feel as hungry or as often, and you feel full faster. And so you eat less. And they change the way we metabolize carbohydrates in addition to changing our appetite. So those are all very good things. Now, let me give you the downsides. Everything good has a bad associated.
Yes.
First of all, when people just stop the drug, guess what? Their appetite comes back, their old eating habits return, and they gain the weight.
Uh-oh. Okay.
So what we're finding is that if you use the drug to lose weight, then when you are down to where you want to be, you have to reduce the drug. Don't stop the drug.
Okay, so taper.
If you were taking it every week, for instance, maybe now you only need it 1 week each month.
Mm, okay.
Okay? Or... One week this month, 2 weeks next month, and then go back. So the idea is to continue using as little of the drug as you can while maintaining your weight. But if you stop it completely, statistically, you have a high, high chance of returning to your old eating pattern and regaining the weight.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's important. The drug is... Well, if you are significantly overweight, if you hit the criteria for obesity, your insurance company will pay for it almost always. But if you're not obese, you're just mildly overweight, now most insurance companies will not pay it for that. And if your company won't pay for it, then instead of using the brand name, you need your doctor to write the generic version for you. Compounding pharmacies carry this much cheaper. Okay, a vial with the injectable pen runs over $1,000 to $1,200 a month if you're buying it from Big Pharma. You can get the same amount of the medication in a little vial that you have to actually draw up in a syringe to shoot yourself instead of using the fancy pen for about $300 a vial. And and if you the drug is stable at room temperature for a month, but if you refrigerate it, I've had people use it very effectively for 2 and 3 months for their $300. So it drops it from $1,000 to $1,200 a month to effectively $100 a month. That's really a pretty nice way to do it.
Do some people come to the office and have the care provider do the injections?
Or, yes, we do. Yes. We can teach you to do
how
it
often?
Once a week.
Oh, you, just one time a week.
Okay. Yeah, you stop at the office once a week and you get your injection. And... you know, there's a little service fee for that in addition to the, but if you're, you know, one of our patients, of course, that's different. For non-patients, yeah, though, we do have a program for non-patients, so.
Okay. And do you think they'll develop a oral form?
They have an oral form. Yeah, there is an oral form. It is, according to the literature, supposed to be as effective. But interestingly, we can get the injections from the compounding pharmacy very cheaply. The compounding pharmacy can't seem to get us the pills cheaply. So the pills are over $1,000 a month. The shots can be $100 a week. $100 a month. So, you know, would I rather do $100 a month or $1,000 a month? I'd do the $100 if I can. Yeah, so, you know, will I save will I save instead of taking a pill, will I take a little tiny shot once a week to save $900 a month? Yes.
Yes. And I've seen this shot. One of my friends has it, and it looks like it's not a very big needle.
No, no, no. It's a
not at all.
It's a 34 gauge.
So it's a little thing that she's putting in her tummy.
3/8 of an inch. It's just long enough to get it through the skin.
Okay.
To the deep sub-Q tissues. And the needle is so tiny that unless you accidentally come near a nerve branch, because there are this random distribution of nerve branches, you can't even feel it. There's no bite. There's no sting. There's no pain. So it's a nothing.
I was amazed. She showed me hers, and I was like, wow, that's it? You know, I envision a 4-inch long needle.
No, no. It's a tiny, 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 really, really skinny, and just slips through the skin so smooth that most of the time you don't even feel it.
Okay. Jesse, you hang on the line. We can finish up our call when we get back from this quick break. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. We'll be right back. Let me give you the phone number. We have room in our call queue. 206-421-5757. We'll be right back. It's Leading Edge Medicine, and I love that song. I just saw Rod Stewart, who is like 81 perhaps, singing that with his young daughter, who looks just like him but prettier.
I hope
and,
so.
Yeah, she was very beautiful. And she sang that with him, and it was wow. Yeah, she got dad's pipes, just not so raspy. But they were singing Forever Young. We're back, Leading Edge Medicine. My name is Lynette, here with Dr. Jerry Mixon. And we're talking about the obesity drugs, Ozempic and some of those things, how they work with Jesse.
Right. Well, the thing that we're really liking about them as physicians is not only is it making it practical for people that have never been able to lose weight before to actually get the pounds off. And we do now have a mechanism to use it once a week, or sorry, once a month instead of every week to, you know, to help keep the weight off. But what we're finding is that the change in carbohydrate metabolism is getting rid of the insulin resistance, lowering the incidence of diabetes dramatically, and lowering the risk of heart attacks and strokes. So these drugs are really making a big, big difference in the health of a lot of people. So, yes, we heartily approve of them. You know, if If there are less intrusive, less expensive ways to get the pounds off, I'm all for it. But, you know, if you need the drugs, you need the drugs, and we now have a decent one that's available.
Yeah, yeah. Is that helpful for you, Jesse?
Yes, it is, and mostly because of the way you made it sound simple and painless to administer it. And I think this lady I know didn't even want to talk about it because she didn't want to inject herself. That was probably the reason.
Yes. And we have a lot of patients that just come to, they stop by the office. You know, if they live close to one of our clinics, they just zip over. And we're only a few blocks from Fred Meyer, so if they're going to stop at Fred Meyer to buy something, you know, they can yes. run in and get their shot at the same time.
So that would be called a subcutaneous injection as opposed to an intramuscular?
Yes, yes, subcutaneous. These needles are only 3/8 of an inch long. So
that's not even a half inch.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're very small and very, very skinny, 34 gauge needles. And like I said, most of the time you don't even know they're there.
Yeah. Well, it must not take a whole lot of the medication then to get the effect.
Well, yeah, well, it depends on the person. And what you do, you have to walk the dose up very slowly, because if the dose goes too high too fast, you can get severe nausea and abdominal cramping. Mm. Okay, and those are the downside side effects. Nausea and abdominal cramping and spasms. So we usually start with a very low dose for the first few weeks, and then if you're tolerating it well, we'll raise the dose, and for a few more weeks, and if you're still tolerating it, we'll raise the dose again till we get to a dose that you're not having any significant side effects and your weight is coming down because your appetite is suppressed.
And most primary care doctors would be able to monitor that. And
Yes.
All righty. Well, if it seems to work with her, I don't know if I'm really probably don't even need it at this point.
Okay.
What's that?
I said, okay. But, you know, with our guys, if they're in late life and they're developing paunches and losing muscle mass, our preferred approach is to get your anabolic hormone load back up to a 25-year-old range, you know, so that you're making muscle instead of fat.
Yeah, I'm status post prostate radiation for 8 weeks and 18 months of Lupron, and I have my next follow up in August, so we'll see what they say about possible getting me on any sort of, you know, I had mentioned it before, and they were strictly against any sort of hormone at this point.
Yes. No, if you're still on, you know, the Lupron, you don't need anything to counteract it. But
Got off of that, actually, but I'm still getting the side effects. It takes a while because of that injected pellet, you know.
Yeah, well, and sometimes the Lupron will keep things suppressed for up to a year after your last shot. So,
I've got a ways to go then.
Yeah. Well, most men will recover within about 3 to 4 months. But rarely, there are some rare men that are just very sensitive to it, and they'll stay suppressed for up to a year. But hopefully, hopefully you're not one of those. Hopefully, you're one of the 3 or 4 monthers. So
Well, I'm still getting the hot flashes and stuff like that, side effect.
Yep, and that says you still don't have enough, you know, hormones in your bloodstream, and that's why you're hot flashing.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, at my age, I would probably not have a whole lot of hormones anyways, even without the Lupron.
Although men will usually not really get down to near castrate levels till they're close to 100.
Yeah.
Women are still making decent amounts of estrogen and about 20% of their original testosterone at 75. But the men, because we start with much higher levels, blocking our level has a bigger emotional impact on us because we started so much higher. But we are still making levels of 150 or 200 in our 80s. So, you know, that's That's higher than women start off.
That's okay. That makes sense. Yeah, well, that'll give something for me to talk to my new doctor about, too.
Yep. Sounds good.
And okay, thanks a lot.
You're welcome, sir. Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for the call, Jesse. We're going to take a quick break right here. It's the bottom of the hour. Then we'll be back to talk with John and Judy in just a moment. Here's that number to call to be part of the show today and be live on air. 206-421-5757. We'll be right back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. Stay right there. Welcome back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. My name is Lynette here, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon today, taking your calls and talking with you about your health as we're all aging. Next call, John calling in from Auburn. Hi there, John.
Good morning to you all. Well,
good morning,
a couple moments ago, I called up to ask if there was a way to resize my bladder in order to sever the connection between my bladder and my colon. I have a fistula.
Uh-huh.
And I've been irradiated, and there was chemotherapy. So
yeah,
maybe it's not possible. I'm wondering, you said you'd look into it. I just wondered.
I did. I did indeed. Yeah, the cystoplasty is what it's called, where they actually go in and surgically augment the bladder and try to make it bigger. It's a tough surgery. The surgery itself lasts anywhere from 2 to 6 hours of surgery. And, you know, with your rectal fistula, the risks of all that fresh surgery and trauma getting infected are relatively high, too. So, you know, it is a procedure that is sometimes done, but normally with people that for some reason have had the bladder damaged with either trauma or radiation, but you're adding the fistula on top of it makes it a somewhat scarier procedure. Finding a doctor willing to do it for you is probably going to be a bit of a challenge. It's not the sort of thing that every urologist up and down the block is going to want to tackle in your situation. They'd be more likely to do it for a woman that had a misadventure in childbearing or something and ended up with a smaller functional bladder than someone with your risk of infections. So that would be, I think, the biggest, scariest part, trying to close off the fistula, sterilize the bladder, do a up to 6 hour surgical procedure trying to get that bladder augmented, and then pray to God Almighty that all that new surgical margins and raw wound don't get infected from the contamination you've had from the bowel. It would be a daunting task.
It would probably require a colostomy, at least a temporary one, in order to make sure that the excrement, the chance of excrement getting down there.
Yep, you're right. So, you know, this, you're talking about a team approach. You know, you're looking at a GI surgeon and a urinary surgeon, you know, working in conjunction and making the plans in advance. At what point do they do this? And then what antibiotics are they going to use? And, you know, how are we going to sterilize the tissues? How long do we want to wait between one procedure and the next? Makes me glad I'm a simple, you know, country doctor who does longevity, because that sort of planning and the risks of infections and problems are the sort of things that give doctors ulcers.
Could that be done with a spinal block as opposed to real anesthesia like you're talking about that can have an effect on your brain?
Yeah, again, if you're... The spinal block can be done. You can block that lower segments of the lumbar spine quite nicely. Holding it for 12 hours, they'd probably want to put in an epidural catheter so that if you started getting sensation back, they could squirt a little more numbing medicine into the catheter. So once more, now we're complicating the anesthesiologist's job too. But yeah, could probably be done tougher than simply putting you to sleep from the doctor's standpoint, but less risky for neurologic sequela from your standpoint. So, you know, trade-offs all the way around.
Another suggestion has been a nephrostomy, which they reroute the ureters from your bladder to external bags.
Right.
Now, that sounds very unappealing to me. And it cannot be reversed.
Yes. And neither the moving the bowel or the ureters to the external, you know, external drainage are cosmetically, aesthetically pleasing. There is, let's face it, a certain ick factor to colostomies and ureostomies. But I guess it comes down to the complications and the difficulties you're working with now versus the complications and difficulties you're working with then. This would not be an easy decision to make. This would be a matter of you having a surgical team put together, consulting with them, discussing what you are and not willing to are not willing to accept, what you do and don't want to have happen, you know, get the good, the bad, and the disastrous discussed with them. You know, when I was doing surgery as a country doc, I did surgery for 20 some years, and I never lost a patient, and I never had a disastrous complication. I had some complications, but never a disastrous one. And thank God I've gone 50 years of medical practice without a malpractice suit.
Yay! So,
but in part, I had that laudable record because I always evaluated my people carefully. And if they were high risk and there was a good chance that things could go to hell, I sent them to someone else. I only did surgeries on people that I thought were extremely low risk and I was going to come away, you know, happy and able to sleep at night with minimal anxiety. So, you know, your complex multiple problems are well beyond the surgical skills that I had at my peak, and I have not been in an operating room now for damn near 30 years. So, so even thinking about it makes me nervous. But, you know, there are smart, young, tough, high-risk surgeons out there. You just have to put together a team of them and see what they're willing to tackle.
Well, I asked that question of the Surgical Center of Oklahoma.
Uh-huh.
They're renowned for posting all the costs of every procedure they do.
Wow.
And so far, I haven't heard anything from them. I expect you've covered that.
Yeah, they're probably saying, he wants us to do what? Yeah.
So, well, I want to thank you for looking into that. I appreciate it very much.
You're welcome. Hey, I said I would, I did. Mm-hmm. What can I tell you? I keep my word, my friend. Okay, thank you for the call, and thank you for the challenging ideas to look up. So,
there you go.
Okay, good luck.
Thank you so much for the call, John.
Bye-bye, sir.
We're going to keep going, heading to Arlington right now with Judy on the line. Hi, Judy. Welcome to the show.
Hi. This seems so minimal listening to all the patients here today, but I've lost a lot of volume and weight, especially after losing my teeth. So I have dentures, and I've lost quite a bit of volume and thinning of the skin. And you were talking about a cream a couple weeks ago about, and it took, it helped with wrinkles. I'm not keen on doing the Botox or the other injections. So can you recommend that, or do I have to be a patient to get that, or can I get it over the counter?
No, you'd have to be a patient to somebody. They need to write the prescriptions. It doesn't necessarily be us. Any doctor can write these. What I was talking about was progesterone cream, and this is this is not the over the counter sort of stuff that is basically soy. This is real live prescription progesterone in reasonably high concentrations. Okay, 100 to 200 milligrams per cc, and it's applied to the skin. You just kind of wet your skin. You put the little progesterone cream in the palm of your hand and wet your hands and rub them together so you got this very thin, almost liquid mixture. And then you rub it all over your face and your neck and the backs of your hands and arms. And it takes about 3 months. But the progesterone, your blood levels will not be real high because progesterone doesn't cross the skin barrier all that easily. Mm. Estrogen and testosterone go across quite nicely, but progesterone's tougher to get across. But the skin itself will have a very high concentration. And over about a three-month period, the skin gets thicker and more elastic, more stretchy. And it fills in a lot of the finer lesions. Cosmetically, you get a much nicer effect.
I've tried everything, and I've had a hysterectomy years ago, so, interested in that.
Yeah, well, we, of course, in our clinic, since we do a balanced hormone replacement, we would replace progesterone and testosterone and dehydroepiandrosterone and estradiol and pregnenolone and thyroid and so on. And by doing it that way, we get a much better result than just doing a single hormone. But that one will give you at least cosmetic improvement.
Okay. Yeah, it seems like when I take my teeth out, I have less wrinkles than when they're in, and more. And it seems firmer when they're out. But, I haven't been on hormones for over 20 years. Is it too late for me to do any of that kind of blood work and be seen?
No, it's not too late at all. I have treated people that were in their late 90s and early 100s.
You're just a youngin', Judy.
Pretty young.
I'm turning 77 in August. And, I do my hormones every 3 months. I get checked and measured and, adjusted as I need them.
Okay. Sounds good.
And he's got beautiful skin.
Oh,
he's got pretty skin. So, yes, he does.
Yeah. Is the blood test still available for your clinics that you're giving? The three blood tests?
Well, we do. The free one is not the one that checks all the hormones, okay? The free is just doing your in-body and your A1C. The testing is about a $600 study. That tells us what your hormones are, but then as we accept you as a patient, it's $395 a month. So it's an ongoing program, and we ask you for a minimum of a year commitment. Because it takes a while to get people tuned up when their hormones have been on the floor for a long time. It's not an in and out sort of job where you come in and make an appointment, we write a prescription, and it's done. We bring you in, we measure, we start you, and we bring you back in about 2 to 3 weeks. We check a few things again. Then we bring you back in about 2 months. We check it again. Then we bring you back about every 3 months from then on. and we check and adjust and check and adjust and check and adjust till we get it fine-tuned where the people do their best. So, the reason is, obviously, we aren't really making you younger. And as we move things in, we have to see how your body responds. And then we have to make our adjustments based on what your body is doing and what the lab tells us. So it's a very intense, long-term project. But we get very good results.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right,
Thank
ma'am.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All
Take
right.
Care.
Thank you for that, Judy. And Dr. Mixon, we have one last call from Bonnie Lake. We will be talking with Joe. Hi, Joe.
What is it with Bonnies today?
I know. We had a lot of J's, too.
Right. Yeah. My Bonnie lies over the ocean. Anyway.
Bonnie Lake.
How can I help you today, sir?
Hi. My name is Joe, and I had 7.5 years ago, I had a stroke, which affected my cerebellum, and I can't walk.
All
and
right.
I've had physical therapy, and the exercises they have given me are quite good, and I use them every day.
Good.
I'm trying to keep my muscle tone up, but I still have to use my walker to get any place.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, but at least, you know, cerebellum stroke, so your balance, your coordination are off, but you're able to use a walker and function and get from hither to yon. So, you know, all is not lost. You're doing reasonably well. So congratulations on, at least on that.
Yeah, they did say I was walking, except I need the walker.
Sure. Well, that's a balance and coordination issue. So, but, you know, if it works, it works. You know, count your blessings and keep moving. How can I help you today, sir?
Well, anything, I was hoping you had some encouragement for me regarding the nerves rejoining. I hit my cerebellum and then came down on the back of my left arm, and it shakes a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I was hoping to get, and I know that I've been told that, and I can experience it. My left arm doesn't go out, you know, like I throw a ball,
mm-hmm.
and it stops about two-thirds of the way through.
Okay.
And,
certainly inhibits your accuracy when you throw the ball, but all right, we'd expect that.
Well, I don't have direction. In other words, if I can get the ball on the left arm stretched out, and let go of it, I have no idea where it's going to go.
That's what I was saying. Your accuracy sucks.
Yeah.
Okay, but at least you're making the effort. You know, you're moving. You're not just sitting back quiescent and accepting what fate has sent you. So, you know,
right.
I admire people who try and try and try. And this is exactly what I tell my 12-year-old daughter is, you know, as her father, I never demand success. All I do demand is her best effort. And as long as I know that she's making an honest effort, I'm happy, irregardless of success or failure. My feeling is, if you try, you may fail. If you won't try, then you're the failure.
You've already failed, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, there are things that we can do that have some chance of helping you to increase the rate of repair and recovery from your neurologic injury. There are compounds and there are processes that increase the production of neurotrophic factors that allow you to grow new nerves and neurons and make better connections. There are other things and supplements and prescriptions we can use that will enhance the rate of neuron turnover so that old damaged and worn nerves basically get replaced with newer, fresher ones that function a little better. Nothing is going to truly fix this terrible injury you've had. But I wouldn't rule out the possibility that we might be able to make you at least marginally better. That would be my hope and that would be my goal. You know, I'm always willing to try as long as people recognize that, you know, You can do everything right, and that doesn't mean you're going to succeed. But if you won't try, you're already failing. So, you know, I say try.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm trying to keep my muscle tone up.
Yes.
And
muscle tone is something we can help you with. Go ahead.
I was going to say I have my towel rack in the bathroom here. It's certified for you can do exercises on it.
Oh, good. Mm. All right. Well, what we do then is we would adjust your endocrine support so that your metabolism wants to make muscle instead of lose it. We can actually shift your metabolism towards muscle production. So those are things we can do. Unfortunately, sir, the music is playing.
Yep.
They're going to take us off the air here pretty quick.
Yep, in just a minute. So we're going to have to go, Joe. Feel free to call back again next week, though, okay?
And, you know, if you want to come into the clinic, we'll see what we can do.
Absolutely.
Promise success, but we can promise to try.
Yes, we can. And here is that number for you to call to make that appointment to come in and meet the staff and have that free health analysis appointment with the two tests, the blood and the in-body test. That's 1-866-86-YOUNG or lmclinic.com. We'll see you next week on Leading Edge Medicine.